Good evening and welcome to Rowan University Radio WGLS. I'm your host, Douglas Mapp, and we're here for another 2 hours of the growth and development of jazz. This week we'll be talking about some of the origins of jazz as well as some of the prominent figures from the early part of the 20th century. When talking about the origins of jazz, one must take into account that jazz began in America at the beginning of the 20th century as a result of numerous people of various ethnic and racial backgrounds mixing the styles of their music from their respective countries with those from other lands. Included in this mix would be African rhythms, Creole music, Protestant hymn, gospel songs, spirituals, blues, Irish ballads, minstrel music, German music, Italian opera, military marches, and ragtime. The popularity in particular of ragtime and marching music played a big part as jazz began developing. There's not enough time to discuss how we got from the first Europeans and African slaves in the 17th and 16th century to where we were at the end of the 19th century, where we had white musicians who had heard African rhythms and the way that African people sing songs of worship that they had learned from Europeans, as well as black musicians who had learned how to play European-style marches and other forms. A simple explanation of this would be the versions of Just a Closer Walk with Jesus. It will sound very different depending on what church you attend on Sunday. We had lots of band music, marching band music, polka band music, and all other kinds of dance music. We also had ragtime. Towards the end of the 19th century, ragtime was extremely popular. As a result of this, bands started playing this music that was originally composed for the solo piano. As we enter the 20th century, these forces come together in numerous cities throughout the United States, including Chicago, New York, St. Louis, Kansas City, and New Orleans. New Orleans gets the most attention today when we start to focus on the very beginning of jazz, possibly because of the rich ethnic diversity, partly because at the end of the Civil War there were numerous army units stationed there, each one having its own band. Many people also talk about the party atmosphere in New Orleans at the beginning of the 20th century that helped to give the music a chance to incubate. Musicians were working a lot and they were able to experiment with different ways of playing the music. I'd be remiss if I didn't spend at least a little time talking about some specific contributions that were made to the art form by certain groups. The polyrhythmic and syncopated nature of African drumming, along with the communal way of making music, are all clearly present in even the earliest forms of jazz, even ragtime. Many of the early songs are based on simple European song forms similar to drinking songs, church hymns, and even nursery rhymes. We could spend the whole show tracing particular rhythms back to particular tribes, but then we wouldn't have a chance to hear some of the great music that we do have access to. I will say that there is a nice demonstration on the Gridley CD that shows how some of these traits moved into the jazz music that we know today. I don't want to spend too much time talking about the music because if we do that, it's just words. So why don't we get into some of this early music that's not quite jazz, but that was very important to the beginning of jazz. We're going to start off with some music of John Philip Sousa. All of us have heard this music, and I'm going to bet that most of us have even heard these two marches that I'm going to play. I will play Semper Fidelis and the Stars and Stripes Forever. These two marches from 1886 and 1896, respectively, have a very strong feeling of being in a very firm two. You can count one, two, one, two, all the way through both marches. Keep that feeling in mind because the music we're going to hear next also has that same feeling. So here we have some marches by John Philip Sousa. Thank you. right. Hopefully that got your hearts going, the music of John Philip Sousa. We caught a break this week. Dennis de Blasio was walking around the halls, and while the Stars and Stripes were playing, I was able to pull him in here. So I'm going to ask him to give us some of his expertise on how that marching band style moved into ragtime and the ragtime style moved into the band. Dennis, welcome.
Glad to be here. The ragtime style and the band style, the marching band style, it's almost like if you could get a piano player to play what a marching band does. You'll hear the marching band play the boom, 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 and that becomes the left hand of the piano. You'll hear the clarinets, the trumpets playing the melody. That all becomes the right hand. So if you are not a musician, you can at least make that kind of analogy or comparison where ragtime is and marching, they're so much alike. If you can listen to a marching band and imagine what it would sound like on a piano, it would kind of come out like ragtime. So when we listen to Scott Joplin, which is coming up, as you're listening to it, see if you can imagine what a band would sound like playing it, and it would almost sound like a marching band. So let's check it out.
All right. Dennis, we're going to listen to Scott Joplin's original rag from 1897 and his Entertainer. The Entertainer is probably his most popular rag, except he also wrote this thing called the Maple Leaf Rag that got recorded by about 100 people. So here we have Scott Joplin's original rag and the Entertainer.
Thank you.
right, I'm having a little bit too much fun here and the clock has gotten away from me, so we're going to take a quick break before we hear the entertainer. So we'll be right back with more growth and development of jazz.